Welcome to Mission Minded, the podcast where we explore outside-the-box thinking in carrying out Christ's Great Commission. On today's episode, we are joined by Jacob Hancock, Senior Director with SEED's Global Innovation Lab. Now here's your host, Jim Tingler.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Mission Minded Podcast. Our goal is to bring you conversations that explore outside-the-box thinking in carrying out Christ's Great Commission. Our guest this week is Jacob Hancock from SEED's Global Innovation Lab, where he serves as the Senior Director of Performance and Execution. Welcome, Jacob.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I am super excited to have you on. As you know, I'm a big fan of design thinking, innovation, and I know there's a lot to unpack in all of that for those who might not be familiar with what you guys do, but maybe we should start there. Tell us a little bit about SEED's innovation.
Yeah, so SEED's Global Innovation Lab, we call it SEED's for short. We started about, it's probably been about 3 years ago now. And the idea was really, we come out of Pioneers, a larger missions organization, and one of the core values of Pioneers is innovation and flexibility. And my boss, the executive director of the lab, his name's Rob. Rob was one day kind of processing through, what do we actually do for innovation? What does that really mean as it pertains to the larger organization and what we do here at our home base? And just had some of those questions kind of rattling around in his head. When we say innovation, what do we mean? And I think what we as an organization kind of discovered was, when we say innovation and flexibility, what we really mean is, hey, if somebody has an idea, we're willing to explore that idea. It wasn't like proactively trying to come up with anything. It wasn't, you know, deliberately trying to push the envelope, so to speak. It was really just more of like, we're open and receptive to a lot of ideas. And so we kind of questioned that way of looking at things. Is that actually being innovative? You know, is that being opportunistic, or is that being innovative? And I think we kind of were leaning on the side of, well, if we say that it's innovation, what is our methodology then for innovation, right? If you're going to be doing something, you need to have some sort of methodology for it. And so we realized very quickly, we don't have one. We are largely opportunistic. So through a series of exploration, we discovered design thinking, and thankfully we were able to be trained by a world-renowned lady, Dr. Karen Tilstra. She's a co-founder of the Florida Hospital Innovation Lab. She came and trained us every Tuesday for a year in design thinking, just to help us kind of get the lab started. And so, yeah, that's been about 3 years ago, hard to believe, but our vision for the lab is, it started just to provide that system, that methodology for pioneers. But we figured out quickly, you know what, God has given us this gift. And we really feel like this could benefit the entire missions community. Why would we not share this with others if we can, you know? And so that was where we expanded our vision a little bit. And it has since become we exist to equip the global missions community for the emerging world. What's coming down the pipeline? We want to help them be prepared and ready and have that methodology to be able to, work against some of the major challenges, the complex challenges that we're up against today.
Well, we all know there's plenty of challenges we're up against today. And, the coronavirus, a lot of things just shifting, you know, all around. Before we go into that, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how innovation and design thinking can play a role in that. I think it's important to talk about, well, what is design thinking? I think, you know,
absolutely.
I think it is a key point. You mentioned innovation was a value that you had at Pioneers. I think a lot of organizations would value innovation, but I love that y'all actually tried to create a system. How are we being innovative rather than just liking new ideas? And so this design thinking is a system that you can put in place to create a culture of innovation. So what exactly is design thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great question. You got to start somewhere, right? And design thinking at its core is a system for solving complex human-centered problems. And that was really what drew us to it, was pretty much every problem that we face in a missional context revolves around people. And so the challenge for us was, if so many of those challenges revolve around people, we need to have something that is human-centered, something that is people-focused, and that is design thinking. There are five stages in design thinking. There's a bit of lead up, which I won't go into right now. But the five simple stages of design thinking are empathy, reframe, ideate, prototype, and test. When we say empathy, what we really mean is looking at the people that we serve, and that's different for every team and context, right? When we look at those people, which we call end users, what do they believe in? What do they value? What do they need and want? Our job as designers, as innovators, should be to go and to learn from those people. Our job should be to talk with them, to observe what they do, to experience what they experience. And when we're able to do those things, we get deep, deep insights into who they are. That informs the entire process. So we say that empathy is the fuel for design thinking. You really can't get anywhere in design thinking. It's virtually useless if you don't go gain empathy. We've seen teams that have gone and had the most rich time with their end users, learning incredible stuff, things that, despite the fact that maybe they've been working with their particular end user for 10, 15, 20 years, they're having discoveries that they've never had before. On the other end of that, we've had teams that have kind of ignored the empathy side of things and said, nah, we don't really need it. When we get to that second stage, which is called reframe, when we get to reframe, they quickly figured out, oh man, like we don't have anything here. So it all starts with some sort of a challenge that you're up against. And we call that the challenge statement. We have you actually write it down. When you write down your challenge statement, that guides you towards who your end user is, and then you go and you gain empathy from them. Where reframe becomes important is we think of empathy as a filter that, now that you've learned, you want to stand on this side with all the empathy, and then on the other side is your original challenge statement. And so you look through the empathy back at your challenge statement. It's not going to look the same. It's going to change. And it becomes a little bit more specific. And so just to give a quick like example of that, maybe if Disney is trying to shorten the lines, you know, with one of their parks, it's a human centered problem. People are annoyed that they're waiting in line. Well, maybe they go and they learn. And of course this is hypothetical, but let's say they go and they learn from people, you know, what they value, what they believe, you know, what they think, what they want. And they figure out that actually people expected that they were going to wait in lines. And so they're not all that frustrated that they're waiting in line. It's that they're bored. They have nothing to do. Well, that's the reframe. That's a shift in the way that we think about the original challenge. How do we shorten the lines? Well, you may not necessarily be able to shorten the line, but based on the end user experience of boredom, we can do something about that. And I think Disney has done that. They've changed so many of the ways that they do their lines, right? There's all sorts of interactive things for them to do. That's the reframe, shifting the way that we look at the original challenge based on the empathy that we gained from the end users. The next stage is more that quintessential brainstorming, you know, let's think through all the ideas, but we break it into two categories. The first is, what are the possibilities? And the second is, will it work? Most of the time, all of us, we try to do that at the same time. Someone throws out an idea, no, that's not going to work, and we shut it down. Someone throws out another, no, that one's not going to work, we shut it down. And what that ends up doing collectively in a team is getting everyone, one by one, to stop sharing their ideas. We want to completely guard ourselves against that. Share as many ideas as you possibly can. Get them all out on the table, regardless of how ridiculous that they are. But an idea has to be rooted in empathy. Going back to that Disney example for a moment, if we said, well, we're going to, you know, provide everyone food while they wait in lines at Disney. But that doesn't address the boredom. That may give them something and they may be excited about that, but it didn't actually address the boredom. So every idea that we come up with, we want it to, you can go as elaborate and as crazy as you can. That's great. It's good. But at the end of the day, it has to look back at that empathy and go, what did we actually learn? And that is what enables us to move into the next part, which is, will it work? And so that's when we start to think through things like, you know, well, what budget do we have for this? You know, what's our timeline look like? What are the people and resources that we have available to us in order to do this idea? That guides us directly into prototyping. And prototyping has, we're all familiar with that term, but the issue that I have discovered over time is that when people hear prototype, what they really think of is, you know, like the prototype cars, you know, Mercedes-Benz and BMW and these companies, they'll make prototypes. And it cost them, you know, $50 million to build this thing, or, you know, whatever it was. And it's perfect. It's beautiful. And this one car functions exactly the way that we want it to. That is not how we view prototyping. We want it to be rough, rapid, and right. We want it to be scrappy in a lot of ways. The goal there is, if we build something that we spend a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of money investing in, it's really hard for us to then go and learn from our end users what they don't like about it. And we say that we build prototypes, we build them as if we know we're right, and then we test them as if we know we're wrong. And so that allows our mindset to go into prototyping with like, okay, I'm going to do my very best to make a physical and tangible representation of the idea that I came up with. But when I go to test it, I'm prepared for the fact that my end users are going to go, I don't like that, or this piece of that is not working properly. That helps us to kind of get the barriers down to be faster about the way that we solve problems. So those are the five stages. It's, again, empathy, reframe, ideate, prototype, and test.
Yeah, I really like the example of Disney and people waiting in lines because, yeah, there is a challenge in that. And if you're not looking at what the problem is that, you know, one is, of course, we'd love for the lines to be shorter, but in reality, unless you build more rides or try to get people through quicker, you know, there's challenges in that. But what if, yeah, you found ways to entertain people while in line? You know, again, it's looking at things from a different perspective, and empathy is often overlooked. We love design thinking at iTech. It gives a common language for our team to be able to communicate.
Right.
We've got, you know, mechanical engineers, medical professionals, media professionals, and for all of us to work together in an innovative way, there has to be a system in which we can all understand, hey, we're all trying to look through a challenge, the constraint. And one of the things I like about design thinking is that it's not just the engineering minded people or the design, you know, minded people. Everybody is creative, and everybody, I think the most important part, can have empathy and understand the human perspective on something and really bring that aspect to the table. So I'm a huge fan of design thinking. I've, you know, been a fan of what you guys are doing. I was actually at a conference when Rob gave a brief presentation on this, and I chased him down after and just wore him out, you know, just trying to talk to him. And I said, well, we got to have you guys come to iTech. And which the Seeds team came, gave a presentation, highly recommend it for those that are interested in trying to create a system at your workplace. Again, oftentimes innovation is a value that, you know, a workplace might have, but what are you actually doing to create that as a culture? So I think design thinking plays a key role in kind of igniting that common language and working through challenges.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jim. I'd maybe add one more thing to it that we talk about a lot. Before we start really any meeting that we do, whether it's a full design project or not, any meeting that we step into, we do what we call the secret sauce. And there's three ingredients to it. But the goal of that is to get all of us on the same page, to have that common language, but also to have accountability with one another. And so those three ingredients of the secret sauce are, first, suspend negative judgment. And that suspend negative judgment of other people, that's how we usually perceive it. But it's also suspend negative judgment of yourself. Because we'll often have ideas. I know I'm guilty of this. I'll have an idea and I think, no, that's a dumb idea. I shouldn't share that. And I hold back. When in reality, if I were to share that idea, even if it is a dumb idea, it may spark something in someone else. And so we want to make sure that we're suspending negative judgment, both of others and their ideas and their contribution, but also our own. The second is be curious. And this is so important for all of us to be working together, that we ask penetrating questions to drive the conversation deeper, and we make precise observations as we see them. So as we do that, all of us collectively working together to do that, it helps the conversation become much more rich and much more full, and helps us all to understand the challenge and our end users so much better. And then the last one is embrace your inner creativity. And this is one that at first I really struggled with it. Because when I think creativity, I think of music, and I think of art, and I think of, you know, all sorts of painting and, you know, drawing, those types of creativity. And I just don't resonate with that. That's just not me. You know, if you want me to make an Excel spreadsheet, hey, I'll just go to town on that, you know. But when it comes to creativity in the artistic realm, that was hard. And one day I kind of realized creativity and being artistic are not the same thing. Those are not equated with one another. You can be creative. You have to be creative in order to be artistic, but you can be creative and not be artistic. And I realized that, obviously, with Excel documents and things, like, wow, I can make these things unique creatively. So we all have to be doing that. We all have to embrace whatever God-given gift that we have as it pertains to our creativity. So as we all do that, that helps us to hold one another accountable again, but also to be able to enrich that conversation and help us all to be on the same page. So,
absolutely. And so, you know, organizations, of course, can use this. Churches, you know, those involved, you know, this podcast, you know, we talk about thinking, you know, outside the box thinking and carrying out Christ's Great Commission. You know, one of the keys is empathy, you know, and then working right through some of the challenges. And so when we think about, okay, who is this for? What could this be applied to? I like this quote from your website, and it says, without a natural mechanism forcing our ministries to continually innovate, we are especially vulnerable to perpetuating outdated programs aimed at yesterday's needs. Our objective should be to fulfill God's calling in a way that understands the times. So I think that this innovation, design thinking is perfectly applicable to the world of missions, to churches, to all organizations, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it goes back to that human-centered design, that if you're involved in missions and you're a frontline worker, who is your target group? You know, who are you sharing the gospel with? Who is that audience? You have to learn from them. If you're a pastor, look at your congregation. What are their needs? What do they want to know? How can you lead them in an appropriate way? But we won't know those things unless we talk, we observe, we experience. Those are the critical components to it. And that's why I do think design thinking fits so beautifully in the context of the Christian world on the whole, of course, but as it pertains to our context, missions. That when we look at Christian missions, both domestically and internationally, the more that we can know our end user, the more effective that we will be. the more that we will be able to communicate the gospel in a way that's appropriate and a way that resonates with them as people, but also simultaneously meeting some of their other needs as well, and framing it all in a way that that only empathy can lead us to. So yeah, it's huge.
Well, you mentioned some of the challenges that, you know, organizations are going to be running into. And as we mentioned earlier on, that the coronavirus, the season of working from home remotely and trying to figure out the best response is obviously something we've had to look at in new ways. What tips could you give, or maybe some thoughts to share to an organization trying to stay innovative and find ways to continue the work that they're called to do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll speak from what we've been learning as a lab. Over the last few years, we've launched a few different initiatives, a few different, you know, products, if you will, ways of doing things. And those were rooted in empathy. Those were rooted in our end users and what they really needed and what they wanted. And so as we were crafting those, we felt really good about them and they were successful. We were excited. But there's a quote by William Pollard that resonates so much with, I think, a lot of different audiences. But it says, learning and innovation go hand in hand. The arrogance of success is believing that what you did yesterday will be sufficient for tomorrow. And that's kind of where we found ourselves. When COVID-19 hit, it was like, wow, we've been doing a lot of really great things and we've been seeing a lot of success. Isn't this fantastic? Oh, suddenly we can't be in front of anyone. We can't bring anybody into the lab. And we found ourselves kind of going, now what? You know, very few of us saw this coming. And so we had to pivot immediately. Now, the reality is the vast majority of us, as I'm sure iTech does as well, we're not really short of ideas. We're short of time. We're short of resources. You know, those are the stumbling blocks to being able to do some of the things that we want to do. Well, suddenly we found ourselves with a very significant chunk of time for us to be able to do something else. And so we thought, man, why don't we try to capitalize on this opportunity? This is actually a great moment for us. It's hard for us to do these things virtually, for us to get on, you know, Zoom calls and Teams and everything else. Yes, that's hard. But what can we as a team be developing that maybe we've been thinking about for quite a while? And for us, that was an online training platform, a way for us to be able to train lots of people at the same time and be able to guide them in a way that's productive for them, yet at the same time doesn't require us being on Zoom calls for 40 hours a week. And we took that time to go, okay, we could develop that, you know, $100,000 prototype. We could do that. We could try to make this thing perfect before we get started. Our first prototype, we recorded videos, the vast majority of us in our living rooms and in our bedrooms. We edited them in-house, and then we put them in a Dropbox folder for people to go access the videos. And then twice a week, we met for a two-hour Zoom call. And that was our prototype. And we learned from it, and then we built prototype 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. So my tip to a lot of groups right now is, what is that idea that you guys have had now for a long time and you haven't executed on it because of a lack of time, a lack of resources? Could you take the minimal viable product, the very basic outline and structure, the skeleton of that idea, and launch it and just see how it goes? It's not going to be pretty. Who cares? Everyone is very forgiving in this season right now. That is one of the best benefits that we have in working from home, is that, you know, if I call you, I'm expecting for you to be in your home. You know, I expect for your kids to make noise in the background. You know, those are all things that we can collectively be gracious on right now. So can we capitalize on that moment? Can we take this as an opportunity and work within the constraint? You know, we talk about having bold ambitions. That's one that we talk about a lot. And a bold ambition is really when we have a grand idea, but then we add on a really, really tough constraint, a significant constraint. And that builds something incredible for us because it makes it tough and it makes it challenging. But if we launch something in a minimal viable product that could guide us in that direction, that's at least getting started. And I know for us, when this first started, we locked up. We didn't know what to do. We just kind of went, oh no, we don't have business as usual. So what does that mean? And probably for 2 or 3 weeks, we just didn't know what to do. But we were able to start moving it forward once we decided let's launch it, even if it's not pretty. So that's my big tip right now is just try it, go for it. Don't make it pretty. Just do 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. You'll eventually get to what you wanted. But you got to start somewhere.
Love it. I think that's a great tip. Oftentimes we want things to be perfect before we release them to the world.
Right.
You know, we're afraid of, you know, they'll think that, you know, these guys don't know what they're doing. Look at the product they're putting out. But when the key is empathy, you want to get feedback and even releasing
Absolutely.
It to a small group. You know, you've got people that follow you and as an organization or your inner circle, and gaining that feedback and empathy is key.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It has been challenging, but it's been great at the same time. I think there's been a lot of breakthroughs, both on our team within Pioneers as a whole, and then with many of the outside clients that we've worked with as well.
Awesome. Well, Jacob, how could somebody capitalize on the opportunity to maybe get training from you guys or learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow us, of course, at Seeds Innovation on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all those places. We're there. Our website is seedsinnovation.com. And if you want to reach out to me personally, I'm happy to interact with you and talk about how we may be able to support you and you know, have a quick call or something like that. My email is jacob@seedsinnovation.com.
Thank you, Jacob. Appreciate the opportunity to connect and love the work you guys are doing.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I appreciate you having me.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Mission Minded Podcast. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Mission Minded. For more information on today's topic and show notes, please visit our website, itechusa.org. Mission Minded Podcast is produced by iTech. The goal of this podcast is to inspire conversations about Great Commission participation. The views, organizations, and individuals represented, interviewed, and discussed on the podcast do not necessarily represent an official position or formal partnerships with iTech.